Welcome to a special edition of the Computer Weekly Downtime Upload Podcast. I'm Cliff Saran, and my guest today is Junaid Ali, author of How to Protect Yourself from Killer Computers. Killer Computers. It's a compelling title, Junaid. I'm thinking Terminator, HAL. What are killer computers? Come on.
Yes, it's. I guess it very much evokes the imagination, but I think a lot of the topics and case studies which are covered in the book are actually examples of things which, over the past few decades, Computer Weekly has actually really been at the forefront of covering. So everything from things like the Horizon IT scandal to other types of IT scandal which have been around, and essentially these types of IT scandals where they've led to catastrophic outcomes is really what the book covers, and it considers how we address them and how we can resolve these issues. Because I think even amongst experienced practitioners and academics, it seems like it's a very tough problem to resolve, where there's lots of opinions. And I really wanted to produce something which was accessible and useful, not just for practitioners, but also for a wider audience, as we've now finally started to see these scandals actually evoke the public consciousness in the past month or so.
Sorry to interrupt you there, but I think, when you say killer computers, it's, you know, it's very evocative. There's so many examples in Hollywood of killer computers. Have computers really, you know, attributed to causing someone's death?
Yeah, so there's quite a multitude of different cases which where computers have been attributed. Obviously, the one Computer Weekly has covered for a long while, which has been linked to miscarriages of justice and suicide, has been the Horizon scandal. But outside that, we see examples of patients being given fatal radiation doses because of software errors. We see examples of aircraft entering. And in fact, the final case study in the book, which has a twist I won't spoil, is about a plane which enters a death dive because of a rogue automation, which it thinks it's trying to, I'm anthropomorphizing it there, but it calculates that a human is going to crash the plane, so it almost crashes it out of its own calculation.
Okay. So one of the areas you discuss in the book is escalation of commitment. Interesting phrase. What is that, and how does it apply in software engineering?
Yeah, so in terms of escalation of commitment, there's two sides to this almost. There's a side for the software engineer themselves, where often they will start doing something where potentially it may be in a gray area of ethics, and then over time they get pushed into doing things which are more and more extreme. There's this kind of psychological phenomenon. It's been explored quite well in a special Darren Brown did called the push, where it's, you know, getting someone to label vegetarian sausage rolls as ones with meat in, and then seeing if they can escalate that all the way to someone committing murder. But, you know, there's real life examples on this. I guess this is one more example with the Horizon scandal, not just with the not with software engineers, but also, you know, we saw the cases where sub postmasters would think they were the ones to blame and would go to great extents to cover up the losses themselves, and this brought them into more and more trouble. And then we see other examples across that, which affects practitioners as well as people in the industry. And there's a recent example of this with the director of engineering of FTX, who knew about the issues but didn't want to leave at the time, and now he's been in this position where he's ended up in the criminal justice system. Many other examples with Volkswagen and other instances like that.
So this is where the software team leaders, or whoever is someone in responsibility, maybe, or even someone isn't, that feels that they don't have the confidence to speak out.
Yeah, so this ties in with an idea called psychological safety, which is almost one of the related areas, which is quite interesting, which is where people don't feel they have the ability to speak up and raise the alarm when things are going wrong. So there's some quite poignant examples of this where, you know, disasters could have potentially been averted earlier, but what ended up happening was that people faced, when these situations came up, people would be afraid to raise the alarm, would even face retaliation, and then would these issues would be covered up more and more so, and they would escalate more and more so in a snowball. And there's actually some research I did on this towards the end of last year where we found with Servation that 75% of software engineers who've reported wrongdoing at work have faced retaliation as a result. So this really is an industry-wide challenge.
You also talk about normalcy bias. What does that look like in software development?
Yeah, so there's an interesting thing, which is in crisis situations, sometimes people will behave as if they are, as if they aren't in a crisis at all. So there's some instances of things like aircraft accidents where people have basically stayed in their seats with their seatbelt on. Some people who are trained will know to get up. Some people will completely freak out, but most people will be in that position where they will just not do anything. And so that's one of the things. There's also this aspect of the bystander effect, where people will walk on by when they see something which isn't right going on in front of them because they think someone else will address it, and there's other reasons there. And so this can often be an important thing, which is that as humans, when we encounter risk, we can often downplay that in a variety of ways.
Okay. So how do we avoid all of these things? I mean, we talked about two areas, but there's obviously plenty more. In terms of if you frame it from a software development perspective and a software team's perspective.
Definitely. So I guess the typical archetype of one of these catastrophic computer failures that we look at in the book is essentially it will often start where there will be, for some reason, a failure in the requirements engineering process. But as that early stage concern isn't addressed, it will snowball and snowball and snowball into the creation of the software, the testing of the software, the rollout. Those issues will be covered up through retaliation. And then when the issues come up again, there'll be more and more cover up. And so this negligence turns into wrongdoing. And we see the cycle go on and on until something very catastrophic happens. So the key thing is to address this quite early. And one of the factors we talk about in the book is called prospect theory. So prospect theory is how if someone, you know, has lost, say, £1,000, it'll take them about £2,000 or maybe even £3,000 in order to get back that to feel the same contentment that they would have. So humans are very averse to losing things more so than gaining things. And I think this is something which is really important for us to be aware of as engineers when we're trying to balance those competing forces of risk and reward, that we have an intrinsic bias towards wanting to protect ourselves against loss, which can often put us in positions where we'll do more and more ethically questionable things to cover up something. And that ties in with this the escalation of commitment, the psychological safety, and so on.
Okay, Janet, there does seem to be quite a lot of things to worry about. What practical advice can you give, can you share with software engineers and software engineer leaders?
Yeah, so there's this interesting field called resilience engineering, where we face, when we develop software, there are unknown unknowns. There are things we don't know will come up. So there's some case studies in the book where, you know, crises happened because of something like a cosmic ray in the atmosphere, which caused a binary bit to flip. You know, these instances which are very hard to avert. And in those instances, we face these unknown unknowns. And by essentially building resilient systems, we're able to address that. And what it specifically means to be resilient is instead of considering a computer system as purely technical, you think of it as a socio-technical system. So you consider the humans as part of the system, you know, the on-call engineers who are addressing it, everyone who's around it, around the system, if it's a plane, the pilots in the cockpit, if it's a banking system, you consider the bank tellers on the ground, things like that, where you basically consider the system, the humans as part of it, and the humans play a critical role in making sure that the system is resilient. And key to those humans being able to be part of that safety net is giving them the psychological safety to be able to speak up and raise the alarm when they see issues coming up.
Okay. Oh, that's really amazing, actually. Well, thank you so much, Junaid, for taking part in the podcast today.
No worries at all. It's a pleasure to be on. And of course, you know, Computer Weekly's put out tons of great work over on this topic over many decades.
And thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.